Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Liberian police fire tear gas to disperse an Ebola protest. And Doctors Without Borders says 31 are injured in CAR fighting. I'm Frances Alonso reporting from Washington. Police in Liberia's capital fired tear gas at protesters who were upset that the government placed a quarantine on their neighborhood to fight the spread of Ebola. Residents in Monrovia's West Point area shouted and threw stones at security forces after they surrounded the area today. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf ordered the quarantine for the West Point neighborhood on Tuesday. She made the address late in the evening.
This means there will be no movements in and out of those areas.
She also announced a quarantine on part of the coastal Margibu County region and imposed a nighttime curfew across Liberia. A medical aid group says at least 31 people were injured in the Central African Republic today when a local militia clashed with international peacekeepers. Doctors Without Borders says the fighting flared in the PK5 neighborhood of Bangui, which is home to some 2,200 Muslims, holed up to avoid sectarian violence. French President François Hollande has called for an international conference to discuss the militant group Islamic State that has seized territory in Iraq and Syria. Mr. Hollande told the Le Monde newspaper today that there needs to be a global strategy to address the group that he called well-structured and well-financed and in possession of sophisticated weapons. He said the situation is the worst the international community has faced since 2001. France has contributed weapons to help Kurdish fighters in northern Iraq. This is VOA News. U.S. President Barack Obama says the entire world is appalled by the Islamic militants' beheading of American journalist James Foley in the Middle East. The American leader, speaking today from his vacation stay on the North Atlantic coast, condemned the killing and said he had called Foley's families to offer his condolences.
The United States of America will continue to do what we must do to protect our people. We will be vigilant and we will be relentless. When people harm Americans anywhere, we do what's necessary to see that justice is done, and we act against ISIL, standing alongside others.
The president went on to say that the militants from the Islamic State group have shown their inhumanity by continuing brutal attacks in Syria and Iraq and by slaughtering Foley, videotaping his killing, and posting on the internet images of the 40-year-old American's death. The Ukrainian military says it has reclaimed control of a crucial town in Donetsk province following heavy fighting with pro-Russian separatists. VOA's Gabe Joslow reports.
Ukrainian National Security Spokesman Andrei Lysenko says the military is now in control of the town of Ilovaisk. During yesterday and part of today, he said, the Ukrainian army managed to enter the town completely. He says he cannot say the city is fully freed of terrorists, but says it is under the control of Ukrainian forces. Lysenko described the town, 40 kilometers from the city of Donetsk, as a crucial logistical hub for separatist fighters, with train lines and major roads serving as supply lines. The spokesman said separatist fighters are continuing to launch counterattacks against Ukrainian forces from the area. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Kyiv.
Israel and Palestinians in the Gaza Strip carried out dozens of attacks on each other today, with one Israeli airstrike killing the wife and infant son of the Hamas military leader in Gaza. Israel said it hit more than 90 targets in the Palestinian enclave along the Mediterranean, one of it which struck the house of a Hamas military commander, Mohammed Deif. Hamas said he is still alive, but the raid killed his wife and son. Afghanistan's attorney general has ordered a New York Times journalist to leave the country after the newspaper ran a story saying powerful Afghan government officials were threatening to seize power to break the current presidential election impasse. In a statement today, the attorney general's office said Matthew Rosenberg must depart the country within 24 hours. And Pakistan's parliament met today as thousands of protesters gathered outside, calling for Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif to step down. The protesters broke barricades late on Tuesday. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yihis Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Liberia has quarantined two areas around the capital, Monrovia, and declared a nationwide curfew as authorities scramble to stop the spread of Ebola. The disease has killed at least 433 people there, the highest death toll in any nation affected by the outbreak.
That's VOA's Anne Luke reporting. Details coming up.
Also in the news, Human Rights Watch says South Sudan's army used child soldiers during recent fighting against opposition forces in violation of international law.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the World Health Organization has released new figures on the West Africa Ebola epidemic. It now says there have been 2,473 confirmed cases and 1,350 deaths. The WHO says between August 17th and 18th, there were 221 new cases. Meanwhile, Liberia has quarantined two areas around the capital, Monrovia, and declared a nationwide curfew as authorities scramble to stop the spread of Ebola. The disease has killed at least 433 people there, the highest death toll in any nation affected by the outbreak. The new emergency measures have heightened tensions in Monrovia. VOA's Anne Look has more with reporting from Monrovia by Prince Collins.
Police fired tear gas Wednesday to disperse a crowd in the West Point area of Monrovia, a suburb that had been placed under quarantine just hours earlier. The people were trying to get past a newly erected police checkpoint. A West Point resident who was in the crowd told VOA by phone that he had been trying to go to a nearby market to buy food. The residents of West Point were not given advance notice of the quarantine declared late Tuesday. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf said West Point and Dolo Town, also outside the capital, are now, quote, areas of intensity for Ebola and will be quarantined under full security watch.
This means there will be no movements in and out of those areas.
West Point is where an angry mob raided an Ebola treatment center during the weekend. Looters walked away with bedding and hospital materials that could have been contaminated. The government says the 37 patients who fled the center during the attack have since been found. But the incident thrust the capital into a panic. The government blamed the attack on a, quote, misunderstanding among locals about the purpose of the center, which was to observe suspected Ebola cases. Effective Wednesday, Liberia is under a nationwide curfew from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. President Sirleaf said existing emergency measures, like the quarantine of several affected border counties, have not been enough.
We have been unable to control the spread due to continued denials, cultural bearing practices, disregard for the advice of health workers, and disrespect for the warnings by the government. As a result, and due to the large population concentration, the disease has spread widely in Monrovia and its environs.
Liberians continue to complain of shortcomings in the government's response. Residents of Monrovia and other affected parts of the country say they are reporting dead bodies to authorities as instructed, but it is still taking days for burial teams to arrive to pick them up. Ebola is transmitted through close contact with a sick person's bodily fluids. Corpses of Ebola victims are especially contagious, so the government has forbidden private burials. Public health experts tell VOA that poor communication and challenges in the field are heightening public anxiety and risk undercutting confidence in the authorities. Anne Look, VOA News, Dakar.
The chief medical officer in Sierra Leone's Kinimi district says the nation's Ebola epidemic began when infected patients from Guinea crossed the eastern border seeking a cure from a rural herbalist. Mohamed Vandi told the French news agency, AFP, a woman in Sokoma village claimed she could cure Ebola. However, Vandi said when the healer herself died of Ebola, Her mourners helped to spread the disease among the villages of Kisii tribal chiefdoms. By June 17th, the virus had reached Kinima, a city of 190,000. The World Health Organization says at least 365 people have died of Ebola in Sierra Leone.
The three West African countries at the center of the Ebola outbreak have at least one thing in common: weak healthcare systems. Experts say that prevented Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone from responding quickly and effectively to the epidemic. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The international nonprofit NGO, Management Sciences for Health, says that strong health systems are key to a successful response to Ebola and other infectious diseases. Dan Nelson is the organization's expert on fragile states. He describes what's often lacking in countries with weak healthcare systems.
They tend not to have sufficient qualified personnel. They tend not to have routine data collection systems that are reliable, so it's difficult to get good planning. Poor facilities, lack of equipment, lack of supplies, lack of essential medicines.
He says there's a reason many developing countries have not invested in their health systems.
Many of them are financially strapped to begin with, especially those in conflict or post-conflict. During times of conflict, generally resources can be siphoned off for the war effort or for general security. Also, these tend to be poorer countries. So if you look at basic economic indicators, you're going to find that most of the fragile states are indeed quite poor to begin with and have a hard time funding, even in the best of times, health facilities.
What's more, Nelson says, these countries often lack infrastructure for educating and training health personnel. Also, many health workers come under attack, not only in conflict situations, but in the Ebola-affected countries. Many have been threatened by residents of towns and villages when they have attempted to deal with the Ebola outbreak. Much of that has been blamed on fear and stigma surrounding the disease. There's also a shortage of health workers in developing countries. Many leave for better jobs in richer nations. In Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, many health workers themselves have been infected by the Ebola virus.
Generally, the healthcare workers are on the front line. Sometimes they're insufficiently trained to deal with a situation like this, and sometimes they have insufficient equipment. You see the WHO, CDC people coming in with these contamination suits in which they are completely blocked from any threat of contamination, and even with those suits sometimes you still find some contamination. Sometimes it's just bad luck. Despite having the suit, you could still have a needle stick that would puncture the suit and you could still become infected.
The Management Sciences for Health official says in building a strong healthcare system, it's very important to get women involved. Also, the system needs to be resilient, strong enough to withstand shocks and trauma. The Ebola outbreak and natural disasters are two examples.
Especially in Africa, where most of my experience is, you find that there's an amazing amount of creativity in problem solving. They're used to working in situations with very poor infrastructure, and they're used to being able to get things done, but they do need resources.
He says it's important to work with the local population in building health systems. He says when bringing in outside medical personnel to help in a crisis, they should be made familiar with the local culture and customs. One of the problems health workers have faced in the Ebola outbreak is a denial among some that the disease even exists. Nelson says targeted education campaigns can help. This includes the use of local radio in rural areas. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
And from the Center for Disease Control, here are some suggestions to prevent the Ebola virus from spreading. Avoid physical contact with people showing symptoms like continuous high fever, red eyes, vomiting, and stomach ache. Wash hands thoroughly and frequently, including under the fingernails. Use soap and clean water. Use hand sanitizer if soap is not available. Use gloves when taking care of infected patients. Cook all animal food and byproducts thoroughly. Avoid bushmeat. Wear protective clothing and gloves when handling animals. And do not touch anyone who has died from Ebola.
We'll be right back.
Coming up on 15 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. China's foreign minister Wang Yi has called for an immediate ceasefire in the eight-month conflict in South Sudan. The call came during a meeting yesterday in Beijing with South Sudan Foreign Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin. China has major interest in oil production in the country and has been actively urging an end to the fighting. Both sides in the conflict have failed to honor earlier ceasefire pledges. They also failed to meet last week's deadline to create an interim government. UN humanitarian officials say the South Sudan conflict has displaced more than 1.5 million people. Thousands of civilians have been killed, raped, or wounded based on their ethnicity. Meanwhile, the international human rights organization Human Rights Watch says South Sudan's army used child soldiers during recent fighting against opposition forces in violation of international law. HRW reports the government used child soldiers in renewed fighting in mid-August in Bentiu, the capital of Unity State. Eyewitnesses who fled the fighting told HRW that they saw dozens of children in military uniform armed with assault rifles and deployed with government soldiers. Sky Wheeler is a Human Rights Watch researcher in Juba. She spoke with me about the recent use of child soldiers by both the government and opposition.
Last Friday, there was an attack on a town called Bentiu, which is the capital of South Sudan's oil-producing Unity State, by the opposition forces against the government, which is still controlling most of that town. And large numbers of civilian women fled from the town to the UN base. And many of them told us that they saw child soldiers being used by the government defending the town. We also saw child soldiers ourselves when we were in the town, and multiple observers from humanitarian agencies, the UN, you know, many different observers. Everyone has seen them. They're being used openly by the government in these towns for the last several weeks. And kids that we spoke to also said that, you know, they and other children had been posted out to defend areas around the edges of the town for the last few weeks as well.
So then this is going on despite South Sudan's 2008 Child Act, which forbids the use of child soldiers. In addition, they are also breaking international law.
They are breaking international law. It's also a war crime to use children under the age of 15, and at least some of these children are 15 and younger. It's very sad because South Sudanese Army, which, as you know, became a national army in 2011 when South Sudan became independent, before that was a rebel army, have actually taken considerable strides over the last few years, getting rid of their child soldiers, releasing them, demobilizing them out of their armies, and getting them back home with their families. We're actually getting quite close to having a child-free army. So this is a real step back, actually. We should also make it clear that there are many very credible allegations. We know that child soldiers are being used by both sides. It's not just the government forces. There have also been the use of child soldiers by the opposition and their allies as well.
What is the government saying about their use of child soldiers?
They have different responses. I mean, people on the ground or people who are closer often say that, you know, the children come looking for work, and that is true. Some of them. There are also cases of forced recruitment. At the top level, there is acknowledgement that this is a practice that shouldn't be happening. And the government did sign a recommitment with the UN earlier this year to prevent the recruitment of child soldiers and ensuring that schools are not occupied and that any child soldiers are released from the army. So at that level, at least, we've seen a commitment to ending this practice, but we would like to see that commitment follow through with action on the ground.
What needs to be done to stop it?
The leadership, the government and the military leaders need to put out orders and make it very clear to their commanders in the field that the use of children in the army for any purpose, not just for fighting, but also for other duties, is completely forbidden and must be stopped. They could also establish monitors to people who can work with the UN to release the children who are with the army now. And we need to also see the international pressure on both sides, not just on the government, but also on the opposition, to end this abusive practice.
Wars and conflicts are just very, very devastating. How is this particular conflict affecting the children there?
Of South Sudan's population is children. It's a very young population. And kids have suffered horribly in this conflict. The humanitarian situation in South Sudan is devastating. You know, the 1.5 million people displaced from their homes, people living in horrible conditions in IDP camps. For example, in the town of Bentiu itself, in Malakal, like living in flooded areas, water up to their shins. The medical humanitarian agency, Médecins Sans Frontières, has put out some information recently talking about children in Bentiu, in this town, where kids have been dying every day over the last few months. There's wars going on, there's battling going on. We've repeatedly seen in this conflict how civilians, including children, have been targeted and killed because of their ethnicity or their presumed allegiances. Despite all the kids face a very real risk of recruitment into one or both these forces.
That was Sky Wheeler, a Human Rights Watch researcher. She spoke with me from Juba. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 21 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Liberia has quarantined two areas around the capital, Monrovia, and declared a nationwide curfew as authorities scramble to stop the spread of Ebola. And Human Rights Watch says South Sudan's army used child soldiers during recent fighting against opposition forces in violation of international law. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
An American foundation and a U.S. government agency have announced a new partnership, which has initial funding of $100 million intended as a bold new vision for building resilience to disasters and other factors contributing to poverty across Asia and Africa. VOA correspondent Steve Herman in Bangkok has the story.
Data showing that one of every $3 spent on international aid during the past 30 years has been lost because of recurring crises is prompting a new initiative to break the costly cycles of suffering. The project is called the Global Resilience Partnership. Its co-founders hope that the initial financial commitment to it will soon double to $200 million, with help from governments, companies, and other stakeholders. The Regional Development Director in Asia for the U.S. Agency for International Development, Michael Yates, at a Bangkok news conference, explained that investments across sectors to make communities more resilient to disasters would help hundreds of millions of households.
We know that we can't stop typhoons and earthquakes, but we can certainly do a much better job preparing for them and helping people to bounce back far more quickly and far more robustly afterwards.
USAID is introducing the Global Resilience Partnership with the Rockefeller Foundation. The private organization's managing director in Asia, Ashvin Dayal, explains that the funders will seek ideas in a design challenge for solutions to build resilience that can be scaled for vulnerable communities.
What does a resilient person look like, or a resilient system, or a resilient community? And you start to understand it has some characteristics. For example, flexibility, the ability to adapt, some redundancy in the system so that you have choices, excess capacity, things like that. These, again, sound conceptual, but they are very real things, and they are choices about how you then invest in a community.
Examples of resilience projects include stone-resistant housing, crop insurance, and better access to weather information. The approach is receiving an immediate endorsement from a key agency of the United Nations. Fen Min Khan is the Asia-Pacific head of the UN Office for Disaster Risk Reduction.
We believe that this initiative is important because it recognizes that working with the private sector is an essential part of building resilience. And without the private sector, we cannot prevent new risks from being created.
Because of poor infrastructure and lack of resources, low-income countries suffer about half of fatalities from disasters, although they are hit by only 9% of such calamities. The Rockefeller Foundation and USAID warn that food insecurity and the effects of climate change are among the other factors that demand a new approach for building resistance to disasters. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
President Barack Obama has condemned the militants' videotaped killing of American journalist James Foley, saying the U.S. will do what's necessary to protect Americans. The president did not specify what action the U.S. will take, but said efforts against the militants will continue. VOA's Luis Ramirez files this report.
This is Luis Ramirez at the White House with a long CR titled Obama, Iraq, Foley, Three Acts in the Clear, Intro. President Barack Obama has condemned the killing of an American journalist by the Islamic State militant group, saying the U.S. will do what is necessary to see justice is done, VOA White House correspondent Luis Ramirez reports. And the text. President Obama interrupted his vacation in the U.S. state of Massachusetts to issue a stern and solemn statement after U.S. intelligence confirmed the authenticity of a video showing a militant killing journalist James Foley.
Today, the entire world is appalled by the brutal murder of Jim Foley by the terrorist group ISIL.
The Islamic State group, also known as ISIL, has advanced through northwestern Iraq in recent weeks. President Obama recently ordered airstrikes that have helped Iraqi forces, including Kurdish fighters, stop the militants from approaching the northern city of Erbil. The strikes have also enabled Iraqi forces to take back control of the country's main dam and made it possible to rescue thousands of Yazidi refugees trapped on Sinjar Mountain in northern Iraq. The militants have said they killed Foley in retaliation for the airstrikes. Mr. Obama said U.S. operations will continue and warned the U.S. will seek justice.
The United States of America will continue to do what we must do to protect our people. We will be vigilant and we will be relentless. When people harm Americans anywhere, we do what's necessary to see that justice is done.
President Obama praised Foley, a 40-year-old independent journalist who reported on the suffering of the Syrian people during that country's civil war and who had not been seen since militants abducted him in Syria nearly 2 years ago.
Now, Jim Foley's life stands in stark contrast to his killers. Let's be clear about ISIL. They have rampaged across cities and villages, killing innocent, unarmed civilians in cowardly acts of violence.
U.S. intelligence officials confirmed the video released this week also shows Stephen Sotloff, another missing American journalist. Sotloff's fate remains unknown. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, at the White House.
Today, the entire world is appalled by the brutal...
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.
What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks, get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah. Now there is a youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally.
I feel like the problem is that once the funds are sent to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Chaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.